I'm John Aran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Guardians are going to October, and it's a wonderful day yesterday. Mitch was in the clubhouse yesterday, taking it all in. Guardians are going to October, and I think what the best thing I think I heard Stephen Vogt say was something that we talked about back in May, where he was talking about when there was Austin Hedges, and they were talking about how they take every single game as a postseason game or trying to make the postseason. Lima, you had wondered, well, can you have that type of outlook? And for a moment, it looked like that was going to go up and catch him in August. It was highlighted when they had that series against Minnesota, which turned into a four-game series earlier, I think last month, where they lost that doubleheader. And it was a chance for Minnesota to kind of take over the lead in the Central Division. The Guardians won the final two of that and then kind of went along their way for the rest of this season. But to hear him say, I thought that that was incredible when he's talking about basically, you know, if you're thinking about not thinking about World Series, then don't bother coming. Hit that again.
It really is just believing you can do it. You know, we didn't know what we had. I didn't know what guys were capable of what. And until you see them play, you really don't know. But if you come to spring training and you're not expecting to win the World Series, don't come.
Boy, he summed up the problem with about 20 franchises, did he not?
Only 20?
Maybe more. Maybe more. And honestly, I think some people would probably over the last, I mean, they went to the World Series in 2016, 17, they got close, and obviously you had the fall apart against the Yankees. I think some people maybe over the last couple of years are wondering, you know, are we one of those teams that are thinking about such a thing? And Stephen Vogt was definitely thinking those sort of things. And I think that when you get young guys playing together for a process to believe in that and then to actually have it come together, I think that that's why we saw him get emotional earlier this week. So he has got to be as close to the perfect guy at the perfect time as you could find in professional sports. Forget baseball. I mean, professional sports, I don't know if I've seen something kind of take shape this quickly where, you know, there was things that were said. I do remember his last at-bat because the kids were doing the PA and things like that. And this is a future manager in baseball, but you don't really think of that level. And there's so many guys that come in with so much promise and they fall apart and they look like hell and they got to get it figured out again and maybe they go on and maybe have a little bit of success. This is an outstanding job by him. An outstanding job by the team, don't get me wrong, but an outstanding job by Stephen.
We had no reason to have any inkling of what this was going to be like. When he was hired, I think we might have done 5 minutes on it. I mean, honestly, it might have been in about last night. Hey, we hired a new manager. That was it. Because we had no idea what kind of intel were we really going to get. Even the people that had covered him throughout his career, okay, what translates to whether or not you're going to be a manager? And oh, by the way, you're taking over for somebody like Tito, who is revered here and is somebody with the resume that, you know, 99.9% of major league managers would only aspire to be able to get. And so he takes over this team. There were zero expectations. Nobody, when the season started, was anybody thinking, hey, this is a team that can make a World Series run?
No.
I mean, even if you're the biggest homer, what proof of concept did you have? And if anything, we were wondering, man, all that stuff that Tito just kind of buttoned up and took care of behind the scenes and making sure to get through the gauntlet of a season. Now we don't know. We have no idea if all those little tricks of the trade that he had, you know, picked up over time and had learned over time. Now we're starting from scratch with a rookie manager who's going to go through rookie mistakes. Well, what were those rookie mistakes? I mean, when they lost 6 of 8 during that stretch you talked about in August?
There were a few there, the 6-8, the 7-game losing streak.
Every
once in a while there's a pitch hitting thing that people don't agree with.
Was that a rookie mistake, or was that what every other team goes through in a baseball season?
Yes, I think that that's probably what everybody else goes through. Like if anybody watches you for 162 games, or, you know, the average fan, if they're a really strong fan, they're watching for 60 full games of a season. I think that you're always going to find something to pick apart. It's the adage of what you've said, which I think rings true and true every year. If a person is a manager or a head coach for a long enough time, you're always going to find a reason to not like them It's just whether or not you think that they're good for the overall health of the organization, whoever they have. And I think that you bringing up how about the guys who have been around in the NFL for a long time. There's guys who just hate them no matter what, even though they're very successful. A season lasts like a lifetime. So there's what you think of a manager in may not be what you think of a manager in September. And I think that overall, like we got to the decade of Terry Francona, and he did. I think he became kind of a security blanket for those who weren't paying that close of attention. I think at times my attention waned because I figured that Terry Francona would cover everything, and I was allowed to just kind of take a little bit easy here and there. When Stephen Vogt came in, I wanted to see what he was going to do right, what he was going to do wrong, and not be a jerk about it, but you know, you got to be critical about these things. But I thought he did a fantastic job, obviously, and I was really buoyed by the job he was doing earlier in the season, and I'm glad that that's continued. I'm glad that they didn't run out of steam. They kept it going, and this year, where you don't have a 100-game winner, and you're not going to have a 100-game winner, I think it goes to show you just how open it is and how much of a chance they really do have.
I don't know that it is really sunk in to a lot of fans, and maybe they still need more time.
I don't think it has.
I don't think it's sunk in
no.
that this team has a chance to make a World Series run. I really don't think our community, even the diehards.
I don't know if they'll let themselves think that. I think it's different.
I don't know what it is because I haven't felt, anytime I've asked anybody, and I've asked, hey, do you think this team can make a run? Everyone's like, well, it's baseball. That's the first thing out of their mouths. It's not like, hell yeah, this team can win the World Series. Hell yeah, this team can get, you know, through the AL and get to the World Series and vie for a championship, something we haven't done since 1948. Like, I haven't heard that. I wonder if that starts to change. I wonder if now that we're here, they didn't cough up the lead. In fact, now they're expanding the lead. They didn't let, you know, the Yankees run away with the one seed. In fact, they could still battle it out for the one seed. They're already looking like them and the bye on a collision course. Yeah. They're going to get there.
It's down to three.
So
the magic number, as you said.
Now you can start to wrap your arms around that possibility.
Well, it's a half game with the Yankees right now for the best record in the AL.
It's just absolutely amazing. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, the times, all right, maybe there was this moment and this moment here or there with Vogt. I mean, the reality is that you only remember the games you cough up. Nobody ever gives the manager the credit for the games you win, and then you store that in your memory banks and say, hey, way back, hey, do you remember that in May when he won that game? Nobody remembers that. So
easier to put a vote. I've learned this season it's much easier to put a loss on vote than it is to put a win on vote.
Right, yeah.
Because you want to give the players the credit for the win.
Absolutely. You went through that exercise, you know, earlier in the year. So I just think overall, overarching viewpoint, and we talk about this all the time, about where to set expectations for given teams, and we've had Cleveland teams with amazing expectations. I still think to this day, there's nothing better than surpassing expectations. There's nothing better than a team that overachieves. And this team has flat out overachieved, and they've done it the whole year, and they've probably been so under the radar for around baseball. It's funny, though. Lately, like Peter Gammons, Buster Olney over the last week.
Oh, you know Buster
Olney. The stuff
Olney
that
them.
They are saying about the Guardians, I wish the people here would understand what the viewpoint is outside of Cleveland for your baseball team. Because outside of Cleveland, they don't sit there every day and talk about ownership. And they don't talk about, oh, the trade deadline. Why wouldn't the Dolans spend this? Like, they don't do that. Instead, what they focus on, the people that are around the game every day and know how baseball really works and know about how the disparity between the haves and the have-nots, and they just don't find it that interesting anymore. They talk about what a great organization you have. They talk about what a great job Vogt has done. They talk about Antonetti, Chernoff, how this team is a model for all franchises in sports, not just baseball. And I feel like they get overlooked here all the time. And now it's time to understand this team can make a World Series run. You better not overlook them. If you do so, you're going to miss out. Because if you haven't had fun with this team this year, you have missed out.
Well, I've had a blast. It's been almost a renaissance of watching them, because I think I got a little complicit, and I think I took a little bit too much for granted over the Terry Francona years. So this was a chance where it's like, man, what are they going to do? They can go one way or the other. We can turn to the Pirates real quickly here, or we can be still the steadfast franchise that gives themselves a chance. Now they're the steadfast franchise that gives themselves a chance. However, the other issue is going to be, is exactly what you said. is where are people going to put their feelings at? Because if you're a 38-year-old Clevelander and you're going into work today, I mean, you've seen this team go to the World Series three times. You've seen them go to the seventh or extras a couple of times and end up not winning the World Series. So I do think that some people, like, I think that some people might be holding back on their feelings, even if they're a baseball first fan, even if they're a baseball first. It's almost where they hold back on their feelings because, like, for the young guys here, for Junkenzie Noel and the names we bring up all the time, this is their first foray into this. If you are a longtime Cleveland sports fan, all right, you've been to the postseason, what, 13 times since 1995. You've been to the World Series three times. You have a crack at the World Series this year. But I don't think anybody, I think people are hopeful. They're hopeful. But I don't think they're going to start speaking. I don't think they're going to be cocky. I don't think they're going to be overly, they're going to be excited, but they're not going to let anybody know about it. I think it's going to be a very speak softly and carry a big stick type feeling with a lot of fans because of that history that gets brought in, because they want to see it. They want to feel it. They want to have that opportunity.
Right?
It's a cop. I really don't like to use the term, but it is cautious optimism in so many ways. So yeah, I think that so many people are like, man, this is great. You've done a great job. You've had a great season. You deserve this type of season, but there's still more to go, and I think they're quiet about that future. Yes.
Ken, I hate doing it, but I want to give you credit for something you said on June 5th.
Yeah.
On June 5th,
I don't know what
comparing
I said.
Stephen Vogt and Terry Francona and the job that Stephen Vogt had done when they were 40 and 20, and that was, we've talked about Lima, like they started off 20 games over and they've just kind of maintained there. But it's been enough to keep them in the position that they're in. This is what you said, Ken. Take a listen to yourself. I know you hate listening to yourself. Listen to yourself.
In the small sample size that I've seen this year, I've seen changes. I'm not saying Stephen Vogt's better than Terry Francona. Don't assign that opinion to me. But you can't tell me that to the general fan, if you were clicking around and you wanted to see baseball, like, this is more interesting. I want to see something that's interesting here. You know, before it was bunts and people get mad and in much more conservatism, and I'm not seeing that as much. I'm just not seeing it as much. You know, Terry Francona did a great job. He's the second best manager of any style in Cleveland history, but I'm seeing what Stephen Vogt did, and now I'm looking at it and go, okay, maybe it's time to get into a new era. That's all I'm saying.
I saw some piling on. Thank you very much for giving me some credit. I saw some piling on though last night, and I wanted to avoid it as much as I could today.
What do you mean?
There's some people who were going, I told you we needed to get rid of that old man.
You and said on that day, though, that you thought that the Guardians would not be in this position Terry Francona.
No, I don't think they would. I can't sit there and deny the truth. No.
And I don't know if they would be where they are right now with Terry Francona, too.
I'm not trying to be nasty.
Well,
what
exactly are you guys basing that on? I mean, Terry was amazing.
It felt
Terry had a bunch of incredible regular seasons.
What's
different about this year's roster than last year's roster or 2 years ago's roster? There's not a ton. Who's the guys that are standing
out? Dominant pitchers? Like,
guys.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, like, what is, batting-wise, like, who's hitting any different right now than they were 2 years ago?
Kwan got off to the great start when they were 20 games.
Yeah, now he's batting 280.
Then they started losing games. Like, I think we're getting a little silly just piling on Tito now.
No, this is not a
trying to. I don't think we have to compare and contrast. The benefit of having Tito was, my God, did that guy. And then 2016 and 2017, I didn't think it was Tito's fault at all. But 2016, what he was able to do with that postseason run, like, we have no idea if Vogt can do that, and we're hoping. But I don't know how you look at this regular season to determine one's better than the other. I think we can just enjoy this season without having to do that.
One's a Hall of Famer. The other one is, well, this is what we do. We do sports talk, so we are going to compare and contrast. That's what happens.
Yeah, but why do you feel the need to do it with this team right now? Like,
team in the playoffs.
But why do you assume Tito could not? That's what I'm not understanding, why you assume Tito couldn't have done this.
I just said I wanted to avoid it in the opening segment. He played the audio. That's what I just said. I just said I wanted to avoid it.
Yeah. What are you getting mad about?
You're asking me why I played the audio. Are you talking about the proverbial you, or are you talking about me? Because I didn't set out to make the comparison today.
No,
did not.
You guys both said you didn't think Tito could do that with this team. And I'm like, absolutely he could have.
No, I don't believe so. Not in 2024.
I think the proof's in the pudding that if he could do it, he would have done it in 21.
I got two reasons for it. One
In 23.
One is the approach of the plate.
They have spoken about that. That is a philosophical deal to the point where they were frustrated with Andrés Giménez and his approach at the plate because they felt he was being a little bit timid, which is oddly enough the guy who knocked in the run to put them into the postseason. The other part of it is, and this is not fair, and it's not Terry Francona's fault, is that, well, you have a manager who was with them the entire year this year. I mean, that's all there is to it. I'm not trying to be nasty. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm not trying to be nasty or a downer on anything. That's why I kind of want to avoid
Tito's
it today.
Tito's health was obviously a huge, really not just the last, year.
And I think
really
that
the last 5 years.
I think that had a considerable
if Tito was healthy and able to be around the team every year, hell yeah, he could. In fact, I think fans would probably be more optimistic about the team this year in the postseason Tito until they see it with Vogt.
That was my
which
big
is only
reason.
Fair.
That was my big reason. If you have a manager that can't manage everything because the things are outside of his power, well, then you're going to have situations. That's the only thing I mean by that. That's why I think that some of the stuff that's being said online, is unfair. And I did want to avoid that. But if you are watching the way that they've gone and they made their approaches this year, it is a much more aggressive approach. And I think it's done them better at the plate. Sometimes it's cost them more. I mean, Josh Naylor swings out of his shoes, but it's cost them more. But either way, it's been a fantastic regular season. They still got a week left. They're 6.5 games ahead in the AL Central, which it puts their magic number down to 3, courtesy of Joe Noga of Cleveland.com, and of course of Owen, who reads them off to us. So we got a little bit of work left to go. I don't know if I'd take them to win tonight against the Cardinals. I don't know. It was day drinking last night.
It was yesterday. That was the good and the bad of it. By 4 o'clock, we were celebrating. Hopefully, everybody got on to St. Louis. And
it's a good point.
Let me come back to that. Anheuser-Busch there.
That's another thing. All right.
Now, the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima give their thoughts on what you might have missed about last night.
All right, we have.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
A lot of stuff to get to, but I want to get to the calls, Kenny, because we touched on something there about the differences between Tito and Vogt, at least as far as the regular season goes, and just overall, where this team is at and now whether or not expectations can start to bloom beyond what, we've already said about this team. I want to get to these calls first. Anthony in Kent. Go ahead, Anthony.
Good morning, gentlemen. Happy Football Friday. The fact that it's Football Friday and we're talking about baseball, I think, says a lot. A few years ago on your station, one of the later shows, they were referencing some sort of a survey or some sort of a analysis that an MLB manager, there tends to be 6 or 7 games a year that they make a difference in. I'm sure that's only something that's really superficial that we don't see behind the scenes. But I think with Vogt coming onto the scene, his aggressiveness, we can see the difference in what this team was compared to last year. However, as much as you can watch every game, I guess I'm not a real fan since I don't watch 60 full games a year. That's a threshold, apparently. But you could watch every game, and you would not know what teams are coming in at year to year. We aren't intelligent enough. We aren't savvy enough to know. We shouldn't be surprised. These are professional players. It's professional coach, as we can see now. And if we're surprised, it's on us. That's our lack of knowledge. That reflects more on our inability to know the game in and out like these guys do. So if anybody's surprised about this team, like we all are, it's on us. It's not on the players. It shouldn't reflect on them. And our expectations of them should not put them in their pecking order when it comes to the other players in the league.
All right, Ant, I appreciate the call. Before the season, in Vegas, their win total was 79. So they were, you know, supposed to be below average.
Yep.
And so that's the Vegas odds makers. I think a lot of that had to do with vote also. And then what happened probably 2 weeks after this happened, after the numbers came out, Shane Bieber goes down.
Yeah. Well, so, and also at that time you had Jose Ramirez, and then Stephen Kwan. I know he's got a back injury now, but it's taken on a little bit of water since, but no one thought he was going to have the type of first half that he'd had. I remember he had kind of struggled last season. Mm-hmm. So I think that there was a lot of just, what is it, other than it's a young team with a new manager. So you couldn't really put it at 79 wins.
And what I think Vogt has done
higher than that,
an amazing job is just that rotation. Look at the names. I mean, look at the guys that got you through the first half of the year. Guys like Ben Lively. I mean, that was huge, especially considering Logan Allen, Tristan McKenzie. You know, these were guys, along with Shane Bieber, that we had all penciled in the starting rotation, and you got Zippo out of those. And yet they still racked up all those wins, which I think is incredible. Jim and Amherst, go ahead. Hey, Jim.
Okay, well, yes, good morning. We've had some great managers over the years, and it all comes down to pitching and hitting. When you look at the starting lineup, it's a who'd have thunk, you know, it would look like it does right now, but the fact of the matter is there's team chemistry in that dugout. These are young kids that have played minor league together. A lot of talent, but the pitching is the real difference. And the hitting, I don't know, I said that early on in the year. I said, why are these guys hitting so much better than they did last year for Tito?
I think one of the same guys. Yeah, they've had a different approach at it, Jim, and you're right. You mentioned the pitching. You got to give credit also, and I think that Jim's also mentioning the entire staff, not just the starters. The rotation has come on as of late. The bullpen and the move where Hunter Gaddis went from basically this is a scheduled loss starter to a very, very good reliever. I think that that has been an underrated part of this, where you add somebody to the bullpen where I honestly thought it was just another arm throw in. We'll see if he can do it. And boy, he's been fantastic for this team. He's not even the best reliever they might have in some people's opinions, but he's done a fantastic job this year. And that was a great move to try him out there. And he's come on so strong and pitched so well this season for this club. I think that's an underrated move.
Don't forget, y'all said Cookie eating up innings.
Yes.
It wasn't always pretty, but they needed that in a big way.
Yep.
I mean,
we never watched his wins and losses. It was, did he get through five?
Right.
Did he get through four?
We were 20 games up on 500. And I'm like, is this bullpen going to be taxed by the time we get to August? And you know what? I think they've done a very, very good job getting to this point. And now you're starting to get more and more confidence. Meanwhile, speaking of confidence, Jimenez talking about yesterday and how it kind of was a reflection on the entire season.
I mean, that's us. That's the Cleveland Guardians the whole year. I feel like we never give up. The guys in the bullpen, they really give us the chance to stay in the game. And, you know, from there, we just have to do our job and try to keep the line moving.
Clubhouse music's always going to be great after a win.
Oh, especially yesterday.
It's always,
yesterday.
It's always Mitch, techno.
Mitch, you were in...
House, dance.
You were in the clubhouse EDM. Yesterday?
Yeah, I was, and I was trying to avoid that background audio, but the speakers were just blasting the whole time.
Embrace the background audio in those moments.
So
embrace it.
Did you steal a drink? Did you get a were they going more champagne or were they
boozing?
Going more beer?
They did the champagne showers before the media got in. I was anticipating getting sprayed by champagne and it never happened. I was kind of disappointed.
He was wanting to, didn't he?
Had you ever been a part of something like that though?
No, I've never been at a clincher before.
That had to be really cool.
It was.
Somebody posted Mike Francesa did a segment once a few years ago, which by the way, his old partner Chris
Mad Dog Russo will be joining us this morning at 9:20, where we are going to be talking a lot of Guardians and baseball with him. I want to know what they're going to do with the Corks, because the Blue Jays, he was Francesa was making fun of him a few years ago. The Blue Jays, when they made the postseason, they were selling corks online for 55. They were like, it was like auctioning off for like $55. That was the segment that they were doing. He's like, you want some cork? It was cork for $55 from the champagne bottles.
There's nothing for you to abscond with.
We can't talk about whether or not he's going to be stealing things.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, Mitch, come on. You know.
Cherished valuables from the celebration yesterday. This could just be the start of those celebrations. I know we're trying to avoid having to play the wild card, so they're going to have some time off between those celebrations. But it'd be nice if they land, you know, that one or two seed get that bye. That's another thing to celebrate.
Goodness, yes.
Well, the big deal is if they can get to one and make the Yankees and the Astros have to play each other in the divisional round.
Yeah.
They're knocking one of them out. Now we're really talking what the ceiling is.
Because it happens quick. Nice. I mean, you're staring at it. If you get that bye, you know, we've lost in that wild card round. I know they've tinkered with the setup over time, but you're there. You're already in the LDS. You're to the final, you know, four of the American League. That's going to be really fun to watch. All right. We won't get to football with Aaron Rodgers this segment. Maybe if we have time a little bit later on. He was looking good last night. Thought this was awesome. Phil Dawson yesterday on 92.3 The Fan on going into the Legends Club with none other than Jim Donovan.
It's special to go in with anyone, but to go in with someone that I hold in such high regard and have a personal relationship with, someone who literally called every game I ever played as a Brown, I hope the focus is on Jim Donovan this weekend.
That was Phil Dawson on Baskin and Phelps yesterday here on 92.3 The Fan. Him saying that, immediately my mind went to hearing Jim Donovan in my head referencing Phil Dawson. Like, crystal clear in my head. And that's something that is awesome about Jim in general is that, you know, they weren't always the best Browns memories, unfortunately, because of their struggles, but holy cow.
No, they came in together.
I mean, synonymous with the return of the Browns. Yeah, I'll never forget that.
The Browns posted that. I didn't realize. I go, yeah, you came in together. Because it was 99, and here was Phil, and there was Jim. And I was like, oh, goodness, that's right. So it's nice that they're both going to be honored coming up on Sunday, putting in the Browns legends. And it's going to be nice to see that. It's almost as if he's being inducted by Phil to hear that interview. Yeah. It's fantastic. That's it for About Last Night. Outstanding as always. 50-50 season for Shohei Ohtani, which is, I mean, that's, everybody likes home runs, and yeah, I mean, he's got 50 of them, so, I mean, there's that. Like, there was the conversation that we had off air with you and Mitch about what was more impressive, the Aaron Judge American League home run record, or whether it was what Shohei Ohtani was doing, and I'm like, man, when you really put in it, overall skill, it has to be Shohei Ohtani. But everybody likes home runs, so they just like dingers. What gets the notice is the home runs. But what Shohei Ohtani did, I mean, that's 50-50.
Had he even come close to this kind of bases-stealing prowess?
I'd have to go back and look at his numbers, but this level, I don't think so.
I mean, I remember Jose Canseco had 40 and 40, right? And that was a huge, huge deal. I know they made it easier to steal bases this year.
The most stolen bases Ohtani had before this was 26 back in 2021.
So he's just like, hey, you know what? I'm not pitching anymore. I'm going to decide to go crazy and steal bases.
Which is unbelievable.
Now, are stolen bases way up around baseball? So are we going to look at this era now and change how we think about stolen bases? You know, because it was weird when I was young and I was playing RBI baseball, Kenny, and the Cardinals had like three guys who could steal 100 bases.
Tom Herr, yeah.
100 bases. Now, you know, we clearly are not, you know, the sport is completely different than it used to be. But this year, they did make it easier to steal bases than in prior years, right? With the bigger...
Yeah, well, I was listening, I was watching yesterday, for example... And I think it's because of the new rule where you can only throw back once. So now it's like, well, you throw back once. We know what you're doing now. So you can either go or not. So
now, and guys that could take advantage of it could really take advantage.
Now it's more on the catcher. Like when they brought in Miles Straw, would that have been the eighth inning, I think it was? maybe the 8th or maybe the 9th. Because John Kenzie Noel got on, and then they subbed out John Kenzie Noel for Miles Straw, and I'm starting to blank out about which inning it was. But it's like, well, if there's a team to run on, it's the Twins. They've thrown out like some like 14%. Like, they just get run on all the time. So it was worth trying that out. I'm like, man, that's such an obscene number that guys don't get thrown out. And then you look across the league, it's like, yeah, a lot of guys are stealing bases. I think it's probably because of that. Like, you can't check them over at first base over and over and over and over and over again to the point where they're just going to be like, okay, fine, I'm just going to be held. Like, if you throw back once, like, that's, we know what you're doing in that sense.
So Ohtani last night was, this is incredible. I know the Marlins are terrible. They're not quite White Sox terrible, but they are really, really bad. He was 6 for 6. He scored 4 runs.
My God.
He had 3 home runs.
That is Herculean. And
he had 10 RBI.
10.
And he had the stolen base.
So he's 50-50.
51-50 right now.
The question is,
he had 3 homers.
How much Shohei Ohtani have you seen, or the general public?
Oh, no, in real time, 0 games this year.
How many people?
No, other than the Guardians games where he did make us pay anytime we pitched to him.
How many people have seen an entire game of Shohei Ohtani not play in their favorite team?
Yeah. It's not.
Is it a West Coast deal? Is it?
It is. It totally is. It was a killer, I think, to Major League Baseball that he stayed on the West Coast. So, it was good that he went to the Dodgers if he was gonna stay out there. But it was a killer that he didn't go to the to one of these teams.
So what is the dominance? Because this is as dominant as it gets. I mean, you're talking about 10 RBIs last night, for crying out loud. Nine again. The Marlins aren't that good, but still professional baseball, for crying out loud. You got that many guys who have been dominant in their sport. This is Wilt Chamberlain stuff. And Wilt Chamberlain played in a different era of basketball. Like, that's what that is. Am I wrong? I don't think I'm wrong.
Well, it's not. Well,
but no one.
What do you mean? Because he pitches too?
Because he does everything.
Are you talking about his hitting?
The hitting, everything, the defense. Yeah. But, I mean, going out there and being able to not just hit home runs but also steal and to be that good. And now you're playing for a team that actually has a chance. I mean, good God, what have they lost? 91 games with the Angels so far this year, I think it is. Now you're playing for a team that actually has a chance. They've won 91 games this year with the Dodgers. They're 91-62. It's the actual reverse. They have lost 91 games with the Angels. So you're playing in the same area. I know it's really not close, but either way. You're playing in the same area. You have that much of a change. But I think because of how regional baseball is, like, if he played for the Los Angeles Rams and played football, he'd be the biggest thing going right now. If he played for the Lakers, clearly he'd be the biggest thing going right now. But he plays for the Dodgers, and I think we look at our phones, we see highlights, and that's it. And I think that robs some of the experience. Because we see football highlights all the time, but I think a lot of people just at least have it on in the background. I think that robs the experience of what Shohei Ohtani is.
Yeah.
I mean, we are seeing quite possibly the greatest player who's ever played the game.
Well, I say that because, or I would agree with you when you're throwing in the fact that he can pitch. I know he's not pitching this year. Barry Bonds is still far more dominant at the plate.
But baseball was a different time then.
Yeah.
Where they did live cut-ins and you watched those games. It was right off the heels or during the chase for Roger Maris. Baseball was as big as it's ever been.
The cut-ins were so amazing and people were dialed in and then everybody was watching SportsCenter during that time. And now, you know, people are just kind of seeing highlights.
Exactly.
But I wonder if that adds to his mythical figure. And I'm talking about Shohei here. Because if all you're seeing are the highlights, then you don't think the guy's ever gotten out. Like, you're not sitting there taking in, you know, entire game with the Dodgers if you live on the East Coast. And we still have way more people living on the East Coast and in the Midwest than on the West Coast.
Let me ask you this. Does it then change maybe where he becomes a creature of mythology, almost like Bo Jackson was? I know we've been down that road, but there's all the stories about the things that Bo Jackson did in high school and before he was on national television all the time and just how great of an athlete he is. Well, now everything's on camera, but you only see these highlights, and I think it's exactly what you said. You never see him look bad. He never looks bad.
Right.
He never looks like an idiot. He's a great baseball player.
And then you're seeing him strike out the side. You know, when he's pitching and he's on, I mean, that is a freak were watching.
A guy like Steph Curry, you're playing at a high level at all times. And even on the West Coast games where guys like you and me are asleep because we got morning shows, a lot of people are watching because of, and I want to see how this changes inside the NBA. It's an experience. Football, we've talked about. Baseball, again, the uber regional feeling of it. might hurt that legacy in some way.
Yeah, I totally
agree. Baseball
fans
not, but everybody else, yeah.
I know we got to go. I just would ask, I'd beg any people that are under the age of 25 listening to us right now, and if you are blown away, as you should be, by what Shohei is doing, go compare the numbers to Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds slugging, on base, all of it. It is his war. It crushes Ohtani, and that tells you how ridiculous Barry Bonds was.
One guy was allegedly with Balco. The other guy, his interpreter liked to bet on the ponies.
Mm-hmm.
You take the good with
the
bad.
It's always going to be a scandal, right?
There's always going to be something. No one's perfect.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.